Good morning, all. I don't know about where you live, but boy, am I having a spectacular morning here. Sun's out. It's great. It's 10 a.m. and on April 5th, 2022, and time to convene the regular meeting of the Snohomish County PUD Board of Commissioners. I'm Toni Olson, Board President. In accordance with the Governor's Proclamation 2028-15, we are holding meetings remotely. I have with me this morning Commissioner Rebecca Wolf, our Vice President, Commissioner Sid Logan, Secretary, John Harlow, CEO General Manager, Anne Spangler, General Counsel, Melissa Collins, Commission and Executive Services Director, Allison Morrison, Assistant Clerk of the Board, and Jenny Rich, Deputy Clerk of the Board. The written record will indicate others who are present. Please mute and turn off the camera on your devices when not presenting. This session is for our General Manager, CEO, to study and discuss issues with the board and PUD staff. If there is time for public comment at the end of our morning session, which is if we have more than 15 minutes, we will be we I will entertain those at the end of our briefing. I'm going to now turn it over to John Harlow to introduce the items that we have this morning.
Thank you, Commissioner Olson. Good morning, commissioners, or afternoon where I'm at. I'm coming to you from fairly sunny Boston, Massachusetts, where I have the pleasure of looking out my window at about a 300-foot tall wind turbine that's part of their renewable supply in this area. So pretty cool. So we have a pretty exciting agenda for you today, and we're going to kick that off with our media update from our own fabulous Julie Cunningham. Good morning, Julia. Julie.
Good morning, John, on that coast. Good morning, commissioners. We have had a lot going on, a lot of variety. I'll start with our Arlington microgrid. It continues to get a lot of national attention. We're excited about that. It was recently covered in the Power Grid International and in the Microgrid Knowledge. And the reporter from the Microgrid Knowledge has been in touch with Aaron. And he's looking to have a tour of the site. So we're anticipating a further story about that coming up. Our efforts to include climate change in our RIP was mentioned in a Herald story recently they did on economic impacts from climate change. That same reporter is writing a story that should be coming out soon about our other clean energy efforts, as well as our tidal project in the past. So be looking for that. Our new A partnership with the Everett Library and the Snohomish County Libraries has been getting some coverage. It was in the My Edmonds News and the Mukilteo Beacon recently. We're excited about that, and hopefully we'll be appearing on their website soon as well. So I'm pretty jazzed about that partnership as it grows. We also have those publications talking about our RP3 award, which Jeannie Harshberger and other representatives from the utility recently went down to Austin and accepted on our behalf, which certainly was appropriate because she led such a great effort on getting that recognition for us, for the utility. So many employees involved in that, but Jeannie really took that on for us. The Snohomish Tribune talked about our solar array project in South Everett that we have going on, and the Everett Herald should be writing a story on that. We anticipate any time. They've been working with us on that. So the Tribune covered it. The City of Everett also has been covering it. Pretty exciting project. A lot of work by a lot of people, but especially Susie Oversby, who's heading that up for us. Then our upgraded bond rating got mentioned in Public Power Daily. And Diane Steele, who I think you all have met, several times. She runs our aviation protection program. She talked with a student from Western Washington on our program for a story to run the school's environmentally focused magazine. So Swans on the Line, the Planet magazine, pretty cool. Then also I wanted to mention that we had a Mano Town Hall that Guy Payne and Aaron Janisco represented us at. I know Aaron and Brenda White particularly, and Melissa, I think, were the three that helped make that happen. And we think we'll get some coverage on that in the Stanwood Tomato News. The next Power Talk is happening this Thursday. Hillary Olson is going to be talking on conservation and energy efficiency, giving some quick tips for our customer. I think we'll get good coverage on that. Everybody always likes ways to save energy. We've had 13,000 additional customers go paperless from our campaign. I'm excited about that. I did want to let you know, thank you, John. I wanted to let you know we are still challenged with the paper supply issue. So you won't see again, those customers who receive a paper bill will not be receiving a bill stuffer or of the wire again this month. March, we weren't able to, and in April, we still don't have paper that we can include that. So everybody will be getting just an online version of it for this month. We do hope to be back with it in May. Then Current is coming out the week of April 21st, another sensational edition of it, all on our environmental work and the great things we're doing at the utility. We're naming our squirrels. Our employees came up with 100 different combinations of names for us. We got it down to 10. They re-voted. Now we're down to 5, and we're taking those out to our customers to get to name, keep them involved in our new mascots. And lastly, I just wanted to do a shout out for, I can't let her leave without doing a shout out to Michelle Hagelin. She's been here at the district for more than 40 years, and she's down to her last few days, and she's been a real good benefit for the district to have and deserves a good shout out. So I'm going to miss her. I know a lot of people are. That's it from me, from this coast, John.
Julie, this is Commissioner Olson. I did have one question on the paper bills. Mm-hmm. On a previous briefing, I thought, and sometimes I don't take things in correctly, but I thought I heard you said that there'll be no stuffers. But I thought I heard at one point that we were not going to include a return envelope.
Right. Thank you, Commissioner. We no longer do. That's not completely accurate. We include return envelopes for those that our records show pay by check. So those customers customers who take a paper bill, but they consistently pay online. So it's just a waste of environmental resources. They're not getting used. It goes into the trash. So we have made that decision to not continue to send. And not only that, just the supply of them is so limited that we needed to really focus on those we know need them and use them. We know there will always be customers who, for a variety of reasons, need or prefer a paper bill. So, but we have a lot of customers who take a paper bill and pay us on.
Really?
Online. Yeah, a lot. Those are the ones we're really focusing this campaign on, is they clearly are comfortable online, and we just need to try to get them away from that paper bill and using the cool mysnopa.com with all of its great resources.
Thank you.
Any other questions or comments for Julie? All right. Yeah, lots of super cool stuff going on, Julie. Thank you. And I do have to second the shout out to Michelle Hagelin. What a just amazing career. Leaves a great legacy for the PUD, and we wish her all the best on retirement. So next up, you received a legislative update in your board packet, and we have the amazing Kim Johnston here to answer any questions that you have.
I don't have any questions, just a comment. I saw that we got Council Member Nate Nary now to view our microgrid, so that's wonderful.
Yeah, Brenda had worked on that. So she's out on vacation today, but kudos to her for working with Nate on that. Yeah.
Any other thoughts or comments or questions?
This is Commissioner Olson. I have none.
Okay. Excellent.
I've enjoyed the extra readings.
Yeah, they're very good, aren't they?
Uh-huh.
Some of them are very interesting.
Mm-hmm. I appreciate those.
Nice to have a little flavor sometime on things.
Excellent. All right. Thank you, Kim. So we actually have three items that we want to cover under other on the agenda. And the first one of those is a 2022 bond placement update that Scott Jones will give to us. Good morning, Scott.
Well, I thought I was going to be later and I was overdoing something else. So let me shift gears. Thanks, John. I'm here. That's what I get for not pulling the agenda up this morning. Morning, commissioners. This will be fairly brief, actually. We put a placeholder in the 2022 budget for a $60 million bond placement. Just to remind you, we're using, you know, our general philosophy is that we'll do our best through rates and cost measures and everything else to fund most of capital in a normal glide path over time without relying heavily on bond financing. And then we'll use the bond financing when we get sort of speed bumps. And we've got a couple of speed bumps right now with AMI and with the North County office, and those are bigger projects for us right now that we're focusing on. So we're kind of targeting the bond placement for those projects. We'll need to place bonds, but we're debating right now about the timing. So let me rewind back to about 2 months ago, a month and a half ago. We, talking with some external folks, had thought we had an opportunity to do an advance refunding for 2015 bonds that are already outstanding. So, you know, a refinancing, basically, if you think about it in the context of your house. The rates, and then what we were going to do was focus on that refinancing. And since we were already going to market and already preparing the documents, we were going to add on a new money placement on top of that, since we're already going to be in the market. The rates have moved away from us, as you might suspect, meaning they've gone higher. And so the economics on that refunding don't make sense like they did about 6 or 8 weeks ago. So we're going to pull the plug on that part of the thought, but we still have a new money financing we need to do, probably between $40 and $60 million. We're evaluating what that looks like right now, thinking about the timing. We're running a little bit of extra analysis on the next 3 to 5 years so we can focus on debt coverage and reserve issues. As you know, and you're going to hear later on the agenda, supply chain is obviously causing us a big wrinkle here. And so we're trying to recast some of those forecasted numbers and crank up some of those costs just in case, so we can take a conservative picture here. But those things are obviously going to have an impact on this. Right now, our leaning is to go ahead and do a placement this year. We don't see downward pressure on rates. We only see upward pressure on rates right now. So we're still leaning in the direction of a bond placement for this year. If we continue down that path, you'll obviously see documents and we'll give you a summary of what we're doing, and you'll have obviously a variety of things that you'll need to look at and approve along the way. So there'll be more to come in the next month or two if we continue on this path. Right now, I think we're probably going to be 50-ish million plus or minus, and we're probably going to be this year. If we decide to postpone it into next year, I'll let you know, but that's kind of what our thinking is right now. We just think the rates are looking, all indicators are that the rates are going to be continually moving away from us over the next 12 to 24 months. So it's kind of where we are. If we continue down this path, you'll have plenty of opportunities to get a lot more details on this, and obviously some documents we'll need you to pay attention to over the next couple of months, but that's kind of where we are. Any questions, concerns, curiosities on that front?
As Commissioner Olson, did I hear you correctly that you're expecting to issue the end of the year?
Well, no, we would expect to issue sooner than that.
Because rates are changing all the time, yeah. And they're going up. The sooner the better, isn't it?
To give you an indication, I think rates have probably gone up about 100 basis points, about one percentage point just since the end of the year, 2021, the rates we look at. And so we've got a lot of indicators out there that are still pointing to rates continuing to go up. If you look at it from a broader historical perspective, rates are still pretty low. If you think back over the last 20, 30, 40, 50 years, we're still looking at rates in, the twos and threes. These are still fairly low numbers in the great scheme of things. But we definitely want to take advantage of it while we can. And Commissioner Olson, it would be, over the next probably 60 to 90 days.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Typically, there's a little bit more demand over the middle of the year, and so we like to try to get access to some of that demand. It usually helps for pricing, and the upgrade helps pricing a little bit. There's a little bit of quality there, and so that was good timing as well. Any other questions, comments, concerns? All right, thanks all. Thanks, John.
You bet. Thank you, Scott. Great job. So next up, Ann Spangler is going to provide some information on our COVID testing surplus. Good morning, Ann.
Good morning. I'm trying to get my camera. There we go. Good morning, commissioners. This is just a little bit of a heads up. We have a surplus item that would normally come to you because of our surplus directive at the meeting on the 19th. But I'll explain why we're going to go a little faster than that and bring to you for approval after the fact. We have about 170 COVID test kits, the expiration date of April 21st. Oh. So if we waited until the 19th, we couldn't really use them. And I think that the team in contracts purchasing and the auditor have been talking about distributing them to employees. Who can use them between now and they expire. And so we're all comfortable with that approach. It's outside of our normal surplus. It turns out that our directive does ask us to have the board approve all of these surplus items, but it's state law does not require it in this case because they're under $10,000. So we're just doing this to be true to our directives. I just wanted you to be aware of it. On the 19th, you'll see a separate resolution ratifying the use of those test kits. Does that make sense? Can I answer any questions?
Mm-hmm. Makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. It does.
Well, here's old Tony asking a question.
Yep, that's fine. That's here.
Totally supportive. Mm-hmm. Totally supportive of it. But the directive, does it still say that, and there may be some goalposts around this, but first offer needs to go to public entities? Is that
when
we surplus, or is that when it's surplus with a dollar amount?
No, I think it simply says that they will be disposed of by resolution.
Okay, according to policy.
All right. That's my recollection of what the directive says, but we'll verify that. Jim has hand up. Jim, you're on mute.
I still on
you? No, I can hear
there
you
we
now.
Go.
Okay, I'm sorry. Yes,
you're gone again.
Oh, I'm sorry. And if I go mute again, please let me know. The directive was modified last year, 2 years ago, for de minimis items. Commissioner Olson, to your question, yeah, there is a part of the directive that speaks to giving school districts, other local government agencies, first shot at these items. But because of the timing and because of the value, these test kits have no value. You know, we're kind of leaning on the part that talks about free and de minimis items that we're surplusing.
Yeah.
And as Commissioner, as Ann Spangler just mentioned, they're supposed to be approved by resolution, but we just didn't have the time to get the resolution pulled together at places, so wanted to just brief you now.
Thank you.
Yeah. And I think so long as the board ratifies it, you know, they can make exceptions to our directive. So.
I didn't ask the question for that. Oh,
no.
So am I hearing that there's a resolution this afternoon? It will, or this is advanced approval and it will come to us as part of the quarterly report.
This is an advanced notification that you'll see something on the 19th asking you to ratify it. So
I'm not asking you to approve
it today. This is just a heads up in case you had so really strong concerns that we should do something different, but I'm not hearing that.
Kudos to staff for being on top of this.
Yeah. Thank you, that's it for me.
Excellent, thank you, Ann, great job. So the last item on under other is an update on the Lower Snake River Dam workshop. And in our last commission meeting, I had committed to the board that I would provide an update on the upcoming Lower Snake River Dam workshop. In the week of April 29th, we propose holding an educational commission workshop on the impacts of the Lower Snake River Dam operations to our community and our customers. And I want to emphasize that this workshop is intended solely to educate and inform the commission, the board. And I want to be clear that there is no decision point upcoming for the board, and we are not asking the board to take a policy position or action of any kind. We hope that the workshop will create a baseline of knowledge for how the Lower Snake River dams impact our operations and our customers. We want to demonstrate our collaborative and solution-oriented approach to bring about the best solutions for our community and ultimately the Pacific Northwest region. The workshop itself will focus on a range of potential outcomes for our community when examining replacement of the Lower Snake River dams. And we'll focus that analysis within the five engagement principles that were presented to the commission on February 15th. And these, if you recall, these principles were broadly reliability, clean power, costs, local governance, and environmental stewardship. And for stakeholders who wish to engage on this issue, we will create a form on our website to gather input and feedback. And that will be stood up before the workshop. So before the 25th. And with your approval and availability, we look forward to that discussion.
I have a question, please.
Sure.
So is there any policy that's going to be coming from the Snohomish PUD at all?
A policy
decision from the Snohomish PUD.
Not at how we are playing in this case or evaluating and looking at this issue and how we engage in the space currently.
So we're not going to have a policy. Are we going to have a position?
From our perspective, we are not recommending we take a position. Again, we want to go into this being extremely collaborative with all stakeholders across the region and really focused on what are the right solutions for the future that really embrace our customers and our community's best interest.
Okay, thank you. And about the forum that is going to be presented, this is going to be presented how?
It will be on the website for access, and I see Kim and Garrison have their cameras on, so I will let them give you some details or more specific. specifics on the form and that process.
Okay, can the board please take a look at the form and see if we have any suggestions or recommendations?
Sure, I'll turn that to Kim. I would not see any issue with that. But
thank you.
Kim?
Thank you.
Yeah, I think the intent here was to allow our customers and stakeholders who may wish to engage to have an avenue to do that. So our proposal is we would have a form that folks can complete on our webpage. And then we will, you know, staff will review that and we can present the information that's given to us to commission as well.
But, okay, my interest is in the form itself. That what goes out, anything like a survey or a form can be shaped in one way or another, or it can be, you know, quite open-ended. So I would be very interested in seeing the questions or the whatever you have before it goes out. And I think as board members who have responsibility over the whole PUD, that we should have a right to do that, especially if we have expertise in that area. And I believe I do. Also, I would hope if I don't have a chance to give input, that you would have a place for comments in addition to any answers to questions, that you would include a place for our members of the public to give comment.
Yeah, broadly speaking, the form that we envision would request information within the five guiding principles that the commission has already seen, that staff have presented to you all on, I believe it was February 15th. And there are some open fields. You know, I'm happy to share that with the proposed language of the form with John, and he can share that with commission as he sees appropriate.
Okay, I hope you can appreciate where I'm coming from on this.
Yeah, absolutely.
Absolutely.
Okay.
And to Kim's point, again, the survey will be, their questions will be framed around those five key principles, because again, the board, you know, approved those principles based on how important those aspects, and especially regarding the issues around the Lower Snake River dams are. So we really want to make sure that those principles are being addressed with input from stakeholders.
Sure. And, you know, in the past meetings, I think I've asked the question, or at least I intended to, whom do you consider to be the stakeholders? Do you consider every voter in Snohomish County, every customer, every paying customer? Who are is everybody a stakeholder, or just certain people who represent different organizations? Or so whom do you consider to be the stakeholders?
From my perspective, yes. Meaning yes to all of those. Stakeholders are certainly our customers, voters, the communities we serve, but also stakeholders being the groups, environmental groups, the interest groups throughout our region. I think everybody has, again, a lot of interest, vested interest, mm-hmm. in how we handle the issue of the Lower Snake River dams.
Sure.
So I think it's vitally important to get all that feedback. But, you know, I would just say most importantly, from my perspective, I want to hear from our customers and our communities, their perspective, mm-hmm. again, around the five principles that we think is really what we're responsible for being their electric and water provider.
Thank you.
I guess I'm confused about why we're having a special meeting for this. I don't understand why we're not holding this in a regular meeting. I don't see the advantage of a special meeting. And I'm really surprised that we're going to, for one board meeting, have some special process for input. We've already received some emails I guess I'm confused. It feels like we're on the road to Abilene a little bit here. Can someone shed light on how we ended up with the special meeting?
I will try to address that, and then maybe Kim and I and Gareth can address why we wanted to do the outreach or the survey process. So I don't recall if it was at the February 15th meeting when we went through the principles before, or maybe the next meeting after, but at some point along the way, when we talked about this topic, I think it just got teed up as we should do a workshop. And mm-hmm. and quite honestly, I think that's how it's just gotten carried forward, as we would do it as a workshop. At the end of the day, that is absolutely the board's decision on whether you want this as a workshop or in a, you know, a regular open public meeting. That is certainly for you all, you three to decide. But I think it was teed up as we should have a workshop because it's, you know, a significant topic. We want to make sure the board is informed and educated on the topic. And, you know, typically we kind of think about that in the concept of a workshop.
I think I'm sorry. Go ahead, Commissioner Logan.
It seems that workshops usually are about preparing us for a very major decision we're going to make. And it doesn't sound like we're making a decision. It sounds like this is informational. I guess I'm sensitive to the fact that only the president or the board as a whole can call a workshop. And Commissioner Olson seemed just as surprised as I was when it was announced we're going to have a workshop. I'm just not sure that a workshop is warranted. I mean, the value of a regular meeting is we can have, there's opportunity for people to make comment the same day as we have the learnings. Or in workshops, special meetings, we don't take public comment. That's my thought.
Go ahead, Garrison.
Yeah, you know, if I might just jump in to give a little bit more context, you know, I think sometimes we've chosen to do an informational or an educational workshop when we thought that the topic needed more time mm-hmm. than is typically allotted in a regular commission meeting. And right. An example that I can think of is when we did the BPA 101, and you guys might remember that because it was a little cruel and unusual. I think it was a 6-hour workshop or something to that effect. We think that, you know, this topic, because it's nuanced and there's a lot of different dimensions to explore, might benefit from having a little bit more time. And the other part that we were trying to do is respond to some of the commission and public feedback that we'd heard about trying to find a part of the timeline that was maybe a little bit sooner than some of our regularly scheduled commission meetings allow for. So we're trying to find a way to, you know, balance that input, the amount of time needed. And then, you know, the stakeholder input part, you know, was a little bit bespoke, but I think this is a topic we've heard more interest in than typical. And, you know, I'm probably an IRP hammer that views every issue as an IRP nail, just because, you know, that's my background as an IRP planner. But we have been successful in the past in, you know, providing some organized venues for stakeholder input that then allows us to, in a thoughtful way, incorporate that into a workshop. And so I think we were hoping to have an organized process where we could reflect what we've heard and bring that to the commission. So those are kind of the three motivations that you might say is more time, a part of the timeline that reflects feedback we've heard, and just having a way to be thoughtful about some of the input that we expect we will receive.
Thank you. I think that was a great explanation. And for some of us and many, many people in our public, in our PD, this is a really, as John said, a very significant issue. And it affects our future power supply, but it also affects our environment and our quality of life and the cultures of a lot of people in our county, the Native American cultures. And And we're committed to the environmental concerns or principles. So in favor of democracy and providing information and opportunities to our public, I think this is a good way to go. And I really appreciate that you did get together at the end of that week of the 22nd. You said by the end of, at our last meeting, it was on March 22nd. And you did say, you did keep your promise. You said by the end of this week, we will meet and we will come up with a specific time for a workshop. And so I want to thank you for that.
Yeah, thanks, Commissioner Wolf. And I would just add to Garrison's comments to your question or point, Commissioner Logan, on kind of the typical use for a workshop being to, you know, educate the board to a decision point. And Garrison shared the BPA 101. We've also, you know, did the utility of the future, customer experience. So we have used the workshop venue for just more education and information. But again, it's still, you know, we'll do whatever is the board's pleasure regarding the meeting venue, for sure.
Well, like I said, it's up to the president. The president is the only one that can call special meetings. So I will leave it in her capable hands.
Oh, thank you so much. Dump it in my lap. I do have a question on, oh, commissioners reviewing the questionnaire. I would not want to do that because I believe reviewing, I would impose some of my personal biases. And I would imagine that the questionnaire is such that it doesn't, it provides opportunity for all perspectives. And we're looking at it through the prism of previously approved board values and principles for engagement. So I personally don't feel a need to, because I believe it wouldn't be productive, and I would probably impose my values and my leanings on the topic. So I don't know where Commissioner Logan is.
Well, I'm confused about why staff is setting up a questionnaire for a board procedure. So I guess I still don't understand why we need one. I think people have very strong and educated opinions about the Snake River dams, and I think they'll let us know what those opinions are. So, but without seeing the questionnaire, it's hard to know. I mean, I think there'd be an advantage in the questionnaire if we do have one to explore those five principles to make sure that you know, our communities support those five principles. But
well,
I'm confident that staff can develop a questionnaire without our help.
Yeah, to your question or comment around the reason for the survey, again, I think it was just to ensure we can hear from our customers. Mm-hmm. And provide a kind of a proactive means to make that happen. And to just continue to be fully transparent with this process and how we are thinking about it and how we want to think about it as we move forward in the future, again, through the lens of the five principles.
This is Commissioner Olson. Based on past experience was with some of these other significant issues. And I have received information as a commissioner in all forms. Probably the worst was three ring binders. So I can appreciate, and it's been used before, I can appreciate to me the value of responses to a questionnaire. And that does provide folks for input on their positions, on their views, but what I'm receiving is in some context that is of use to me. So I haven't been through this a number of times. I do support the questionnaire. And I need to clarify some things. And John, you spoke to these in your intro, but I feel a responsibility for my constituents that I clarify the intent, the purpose and intent of this workshop. I've kind of heard it go all over the board, and I want to nail this in terms of my participation on their behalf. Agree, the board in February reviewed the values and the principles for engagement. I'm done with that. That is what it is. The board approved that. However, what I think I heard was the purpose is to educate us on recent developments, provide us with some more background in a somewhat of a more structured way to, and particularly because there's going to be some regional discussions in the near future. And that I will receive the supplemental information as you have suggested. And I would assume staff is going to be giving me some analysis through the values and principles that have been previously identified. And that I will receive progress reports. As John, staff always does, and in terms of this has been going on for a number of years and it will continue to go on for I don't know how long, but the board has blessed principles of engagement, and I'll expect to have progress reports following this workshop. At what frequency, I don't know. But I want to hit for me that participation in this workshop, I am not expected to take a position on the merits of keeping the dams or removing the dams. I'm not expected to participate in a debate other than exchange of information amongst the commissioners. And I'm not, and I, John, I believe you've already answered that. I'm not being asked to make a decision even in subsequent meetings. To me, this is very important. And I believe I was a bit confused on that, but I just wanted to ask it again.
Yep.
Are my assumptions correct?
Yes, they are.
Well, I think our customers need to hear that, the need that this is an ongoing process and that Snohomish wants to participate, but in a way that links back to our values and principles. Our customers, we serve these customers. Those relate to our customers. And for me, our customers are the most important thing in this whole issue, in this whole thing. Yeah. And then on the venue, Commissioner Logan did mention some things in terms of the venue and dumped in my lap that it's my responsibility to decide if it's a workshop or not. And I must say that has been discussed before, and the full board has been silent on that. So the way I play the game, a silence is a yes. I think you've answered some of this, but why does staff believe a workshop is the most the venue that is most compatible to a productive discussion?
So I think it's by and large because a workshop allows for more dedicated time for presentation of analysis and discussion. I mean, it's pretty much singularly focused on this topic and the analysis and the education and providing the information, getting questions, from the board, so we can really make sure that we understand the impacts and the effects of the Lower Snake River dams and any potential future action that would be taken.
And I want to clarify too, the information that folks want the board to have outside of staff, that it will all be in written form. A workshop is a public meeting. Do folks have the opportunity to listen in?
Yes. Yep.
Okay.
Absolutely.
But the information I receive and will use is through the questionnaire and any supplemental information that they provide.
Yes.
It's a listening opportunity for the public, but not an opportunity to present oral. We will not be actually interfacing with those that have an interest in communicating with us.
Yeah,
which is our standard practice for workshops.
Right.
I just want to clarify that.
Yeah, exactly. That's okay. Standard practice for a workshop, that there isn't a time for public comment. But again, we're hoping that public comment will come through the survey, and we will share that, certainly with the board. And that would be part of the information provided at the workshop. And I'll just mention too, regarding the kind of the thoughts behind why a workshop. You made the comment, Commissioner Olson, this has been going on for quite a while, and it certainly has. I mean, even a number of years. But there is a heightened sense of urgency, given all the different, all the activity going on around the Lower Snake River dams. And the workshop does give us the ability from a timing perspective to accelerate having that discussion with the board and doing the analysis and the education and providing that information. So that was also a little bit of the thought behind why a workshop. After we had already, we're under the impression that that's the venue we were going to use.
I gotcha. I gotcha. But excuse me, Commissioner, please. Commissioner Wolf.
I just want to commend the staff and Mr. Harlow and everyone who has worked hard to help us educate our public who own this PUD. I think more information, more democracy in action is a good thing in a public utility. This is, I've heard John say many times why he values working in a public utility as opposed to a for-profit utility. And that is a big difference. And so we need to always be mindful of that. And so I just want to close my comments. I think I'm closing them just by saying thank you. Thank you for putting this together. And I don't see any harm in our having a look at the form or the questionnaire before it goes out. As I said before, I think we have a right to do that as the ones who ultimately have a responsibility. And to say that all biases, all opinions, all values go out the window when we are elected for different reasons. And so if you take that, then you would just have functionaries acting as board members. You wouldn't have real living thinking people. And so thank you again for working with us on this. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thanks, Commissioner Wolf. And I'll just say a little bit of color commentary from my perspective. This is an opportunity for us, the PUD, on behalf of our customers and owners/owners, to use the extraordinary experience and expertise that we have. I mean, that's Garrison's team, that's Keith Binkley's team, that's Kim's team throughout the organization to have a positive impact on this process moving forward. Mm-hmm. And again, in with significant collaboration with all stakeholders, us having a seat on the table, us having, you know, hopefully some positive influence, some positive impact to where we can actually have a solution at the end of the day that is best for our customers, our communities, and the entire region. That's my vision. That's my goal.
I appreciate that.
Well, I'm glad we're going to have the conversation, and I'm glad we're going to learn more. I am, as you can tell, I think I'm frustrated by the process. The staff cannot call a special meeting. Only the president can call a special meeting. That's the law, or a vote of the majority of the commission. And it just feels like we're going about this a little backwards. So that's what frustrates me. But I'm very excited for it, and it'll be a great opportunity for everybody and for our public to learn more and see what staff is thinking about how to help be, impactful in this process and making sure that we do the best for our customers and the environment and everyone else. So,
yeah,
it'll be a good conversation.
Yeah, thanks for that, Commissioner Logan. And I'll just say, again, I'll apologize. That was probably my bust to kind of assume we were going down the workshop path, but I'll absolutely keep that in mind. And again, we'll support whatever decision that the chair, Commissioner Olson, and the board as a whole decide is the best venue to do this.
This is Commissioner Olson. Commissioner Logan, I agree with you on process. However, I know that I think this is complicated by the fact that the board has used, when we've talked about it previously, it's been in the context of a workshop. And I fail to pick up on the fact that we did not necessarily coalesce around whether it's a regular meeting or a workshop. So from my perspective, silence means a workshop. Any other comments, commissioners? Well, John, I guess we can move on to the next item.
So just for clarification, are we continuing down the workshop path, or does the board want to think about that and come back, or what's your direction?
I think we have an obligation to our public to have a workshop, because there really is not the kind of quantitative and qualitative input in a usual board meeting. There just isn't that opportunity.
Well, again, my silence is a yes.
And I vote yes, or I agree.
Okay, so we will move forward with trying to set up the workshop for the, 25th?
9th. April 29th.
Week of the April 25th, and that may be specifically the 29th, but we'll move forward in that direction.
Okay.
All right, thank you. So, get back to the agenda, and thank you very much for that discussion. Very, very helpful. So next up on the agenda is Maureen Barnes to talk about a Harbor Homes sewer easement. Good morning, Maureen.
Good morning, thank you. Good morning, everyone. I'm Maureen Barnes, the manager of Real Estate Services. And what I have before you is just informational in order to let you know what's coming down the line, which is the 19th. We'll be bringing a staff to request a public hearing and a vote in order to allow us to move forward to grant an easement to Harbor Homes for approximately 5,800 square foot sewer line that will cross our fee-owned property.
Marie, could I just interrupt you for 1 second? Your voice is coming over really distorted with some background noise. Can you just confirm your volume settings for me?
Yeah. I'm not sure what.
Okay, you could go ahead and continue then.
I'm sorry. Anyway, so the background on this, the district owns approximately 5.5 acres in fee located off of North Road and South Bellflower Road in Gothel. Harbor Homes is requesting a 20-foot easement, which would run along a portion of the southern boundary and the eastern property line. The total easement area is 5,828 square feet. Compensation amount is $20,000. The sewer easement will cross a Williams pipeline easement, which is high pressure. Due to that, we did request that we get a letter of no objection from Williams Pipeline, of which they then went out, met with the prospective developers, and did boring, and came back that they have no problems with it. There will be no adverse effects to their easement, and therefore issued us a letter of no objection. Once this is completed, it will be dedicated over to the Alderwood Water and Wastewater District. So therefore, any future maintenance would, of course, be done by them. Right here, you can see this is the parcel of land, the easement area, and where the pipeline is. So we spoke with staff, and no district equipment, facilities, or any access will be impacted. Staff has reviewed it and has absolutely no problem with it granting this request. Legal has also approved it, and they have helped with the verbiage on the actual easement language. We also recommend that it be approved and that we come back on April 19th to hold a public hearing and a vote on this resolution. And I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Maureen. I did have difficulty hearing you, but I thank you for the visuals because that helped a lot. I'm assuming that at this stage of the process, the county has done all of their due diligence permitting. Their development department has approved all of the everything. Is that correct?
Not completely approved. This is one of the last pieces of it. And once that's acquired, then via their binding site plan, that will be turned over to Alderwood. And yes, the county is aware of it.
Okay, and that's in the development department, right?
Yes.
Okay, the other question, only other question I have is regarding the Williams pipeline. Is that a natural gas pipeline or what kind of pipeline?
My understanding is it is natural gas and it's high pressurized. And it's been there a very, very long time.
Is that part of Puget Sound Energy?
No, it's Williams Pipeline.
Oh, okay. I hadn't heard of them, and I do try to stay informed on, you know, energy pipelines and things like that. So where does it go? I mean,
to be perfectly honest, I'm not sure, but I can certainly.
It's a large natural gas pipeline that feeds a lot of the area, I believe.
Yes.
Oh, yeah, I would suspect it's a transmission pipeline if it's a Williams pipeline.
Yes.
And yes, it probably, as Commissioner Logan said, it probably feeds a number of stations in the area and then continues on.
Oh, well, that's okay. I always wonder like, well, who owns it? I mean, it's Williams, whoever Williams is, but is it a Puget Sound Energy part of their system or somebody else's system or?
No, it's a Williams pipeline.
Yeah.
Williams is a natural gas transmission company.
Oh, well, that's interesting. Thank you, John.
Sure.
This is Commissioner Olson. This is a easement, perpetual easement?
Yes, it is.
All right. On slide 4, again, the Williams pipeline, it says Harbor Homes has done testing with Williams to determine there will be no adverse effects to their easement.
Yes.
Is the PUD removed from any liability if there should be some issues?
Yes, we are.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Maureen, for your presentation.
Oh, you're very welcome. Thank you.
And thank you.
I will see you back on the 19th.
All right. Thank you, Maureen. Great job. Next up is a supply chain update from Mark Fleury. Good morning, Mark. And Clark, I believe Clark Langstad is going to tag team with Mark.
That's right, John. Good morning, and good morning, commissioners.
Good morning. That's a great picture on your intro. Is that one of our employees there?
That's Sue Martin from the warehouse.
Oh, hi, Sue Martin. That's a great picture. Wonderful.
Actually, I was thinking we should submit that to
something.
Something to get an award for it.
I know, really.
Please go on. Mark.
Okay, I'll start with introductions. I am the Senior Manager of Transmission and Distribution System Operations and Engineering, and I'm joined today by Clark Langstrat, the Manager of Contracts and Purchasing, and Clark's going to lead us off this morning.
Thank you, Mark. Can you all hear me just fine?
Yes.
Okay, good. I'm sure you've all seen references to supply chain constraints in the news, and I know that I've brought you some bid awards that have referenced some of those constraints. So Mark and I are here this morning to provide some background and some context and talk about the impacts on the district. In this slide, you'll see how we've organized the information. We're gonna provide you with a recent history, take a look at some of the root causes. We have some vendor correspondence that highlights some of the difficulties that they face and how they communicate those things to us. We'll talk about some of the critical materials that we use here at the district that are impacted, and then some of the overall impacts to the district. Talk about some of the mitigation strategies that we're using and then how we're approaching this in the future. So get the next slide. Just a brief history. Back in 2020, when a lot of us started working from home, there are manufacturing facilities around the world and certainly in the U.S. that either were shut down for a time or remained open but had limited capacity due to COVID prevention measures. And at the time, it was difficult for us to forecast how long those measures might be impacting us. I think we can all share that we thought maybe we'd be home for 2 weeks or 2 months. We really didn't know that it was going to stretch to 2 years. So that's how it affected us personally, but from a supply chain perspective and just some of those dampening effects, demand was down for much of 2020. So it was difficult to determine how that impact, going into 2021 and 22, how that might impact us. And it was difficult to see what that reduction of capacity would entail for us. As we went home, probably the thing that we were worried most about was people that remained working for the district, either in the office or in the field, and we were presented with shortages for personal protection equipment, like masks and gloves and thermometers. So that was some of the initial supply chain things that we had to overcome. And those were, for the most part, temporary because production was ramped up fairly quickly for those. But as we moved into late 2020 and 2021, a lot of demand came back online. Suppliers struggled to restore their production facilities. We saw some increased volatility in many of the markets that our suppliers work in. We started to see lead times extend past what we had recorded for past orders, and even started to see them extend past what had been quoted by suppliers when they bid or when they provided us price lists for materials. And also prices increased at rates that exceeded our projections. So because of this volatility and uncertainty, an emergency was declared by John and then ratified by commission on September 21 of 2021. And then on the next slide, these are some of the root causes that we've identified that contributed to this situation. There had been a shortage of skilled labor in some of the markets that that our suppliers worked in, for welders who were who could work with the metals that we and some of the structures that we buy used was an example. They had competition with shipbuilders for those, so transformer manufacturers were having trouble getting skilled labor. You know, in general, inflation has increased. I think we all are aware how inflation has increased over the last 2 years. Raw material shortages, some of it because of, COVID measures, but also just shortages and scarcity. Copper, for example, which is used in a variety of our items, has seen significant shortages and higher prices. There's been shipping delays, a shortage of truck drivers across the country. And then we all were aware not so long ago of the container ship gridlock that made the news for a couple of cycles. All of that contributed to just delays in getting raw materials to manufacturers and then those finished products to us when we've placed orders. And then something also to highlight is there's competition for some of these items among different industries. So where we use transformers that require copper windings, or we buy meters that require microchips. Those are, for example, also used to manufacture electric vehicles. And so that puts supply pressure on our suppliers. They've contracted with us at a certain price, but those competing industries are driving up demand and component pricing in ways that were not expected when those pricing agreements were created. So on the next two slides, just wanted to highlight some examples of communication we've received from suppliers. And this took place as we came into the latter part of 2021, and it started to become obvious to suppliers that this was going to be a long-term impact on supply chain around the world and across the US. And so that you can see that they're highlighting delays, increases in lead time, highlighting the pandemic and shortages in transportation. Some of them listing specific components, specific products. And then on the next slide, something more specific. This is our distribution transformer supplier. I have the current contract to provide those transformers to the district. And you can see they have a fairly extensive calculation here that takes all of the commodities that they use to build those transformers. And they process it through their formula or algorithm here. And we come up with what amounts to a 20%, nearly 20% price increase. And this pricing this pricing covered the first quarter of this year, and it represents increases from prices that they bid in July of last year. So approximately 6 months, the price went up 20% for those transformers. And we have some more detailed information on later slides regarding that. In fact, we'll move to Mark to talk about some of those specific impacts at this point.
Thank you, Clark. So some of the most critical materials impacted are listed on this slide. As you know, commissioners, most of our new development is served by underground electrical distribution systems. So transformers are a critical item. pad mount transformers to ensure we can meet load growth, overhead transformers for the upcoming storm season, and substation transformers, which currently have a lead time now of over 24 months for our capital planning and capital expansion projects. Also listed here, wire and cable for obvious reasons. They're used in high quantity and are closely tracked. Load break elbows for underground systems, primarily to meet load growth. And protection and control equipment have also been impacted, as well as any petrochemical based products such as PVC conduit, which we need for all of our underground distribution construction. And then lastly, impacts to the water utility include water meter boxes and lids for those boxes. This next slide illustrates the current situation for pad mount transformer impacts. The leftmost column lists common single phase transformer sizes, such as those used to serve residential customers and residential developments. And moving from left to right on this slide here, the next column shows the average annual demand, the historical lead time based on the last few years in days, and then the last date an order was placed and the number of days waiting for the shipment. It's important to know that we do have purchase orders exceeding 400 days. The days waiting for the shipment is just a current snapshot. However, we don't know exactly when we might actually receive these transformers in our warehouse. Slide 10 here shows the cost impacts for those commonly used single phase pad mount transformers. These are the same sizes that I showed on the previous slide. The 2015 cost and the June 2021 cost is shown, which indicates alone a dramatic increase in price. And then the rightmost column shows the January 2022 projected cost. At the beginning of the year, our vendor sent us a price escalation letter letting us know what to expect in terms of continued price increases. And these price increases are for our contracted vendor, whose contract was awarded through our standard procurement process. Utilizing that emergency declaration that was approved back in September of last year, we're in the process of placing a spot order for 48 larger size three-phase transformers. And for that purchase, we're anticipating a 30% cost increase.
Holy cow.
We would have expected from our contracted vendor. And those transformer sizes vary from 300 kVA up to 1,000 kVA. So on the operations side, we're making judicious use of stock on hand, which means we're, Clark, I jumped in on your slide.
That's all right, Mark. Can you back up just a second to that previous slide? I just wanted to note that in that rightmost column where we have our pricing for the first quarter of 2022, we have yet to firm up pricing for the second quarter of 2022. Yeah. So this is, we anticipate upward pressure continuing on that, but we don't have pricing on that. So it's not going to plateau anytime soon.
Thank you for answering one of my questions.
I guess I'd add on that note, what we're hearing from the vendors is 1 to 2 years to expect this continued constraint on supply chain.
Right.
Okay, sorry, Clark, over to you.
No, that's all right. So overall impacts on the PUD, these higher material costs, obviously, as Scott alluded to previously in this meeting, they impact our cash reserves. These material shortages possibly affect reliability and the ability to respond to storms. I think we lucked out in this last storm season. It didn't have a huge impact on some of these quantities, but certainly as we look forward to the longer timeframe on this, that's something that we're concerned about. Material shortages also delay us in providing transformers and other items for plat development and other customer projects. It increases our construction costs, both for material that we buy for our own crews to work on projects, but also when contractors are providing materials for projects, their costs have increased similarly to ours, raising our construction costs. And then one of the impacts that you certainly have heard about to this point is, as we look to implement Connect Up, this uncertainty around lead times just affects hiring plans and strategies for meter readers, meter installers, and warehouse personnel that we're anticipated needing to support Connect Up. And then on the next slide, talk about what we've done to try to mitigate this. We've changed the way we procure. Aggressive is a word to use. Proactive is another word that we use, becoming more proactive. As Mark alluded to, we make more spot buys now as we find items that become available. Some of those items are available from vendors that may not be on our current contracts. The emergency declaration allows us to waive bidding and move more quickly than our standard practices allow. And when we've identified goods that are available, we can't wait 6 to 8 months to do the bid process because another utility may very likely snap up those materials. They won't be, they're unavailable long enough for us to do a standard formal bid. We've expanded our sourcing efforts to vendors that we may not have used as much in the past. We've looked for other utilities through various organizations who may have equipment that we can use. This can be hampered somewhat by the fact that there really is no common specification across the utility industry. So many of the materials that we use are not compatible with similar items from other utilities. I guess the way to say that is the items that the other utilities have are, may not be compatible with our system. And so we're hampered a little bit by that as we try to share materials among other utilities. And then these extended lead times have caused us to push out our planning window further into the future. Just a rule of thumb when we're looking at how many items to order and how often to order, we were using a 6 to 12 month supply window. And now we've moved to a 12 month. And in some cases, like Mark alluded to for substation transformers, some of the larger transformers, we can go 2 years out and look ahead for the quantities that we need to purchase. And in those cases, we're really just reserving spots on the production line because we don't know exactly what we're going to need for those projects, but we want to make sure the manufacturer is committed to providing whatever we will need for that future date. And then in the next slide, Mark's going to talk about some of the specific mitigation strategies that he's used from an operations side.
So we have made judicious use of stock on hand, which means we've kept an emergency level or threshold of reserve stock for emergencies, also prioritizing customer work and delaying or phasing jobs, which includes some of our BO cable projects, prioritizing new load growth and customer over those projects where we would typically replace the transformer. We've also looked at resizing transformers to make sure that we're mixing between single phase stocks, such as 25, 37 and a half and 50 kVA transformers, and then reusing parts if appropriate. We're bringing transformers back to the transformer shop and refurbishing to the extent that we can and resizing and reusing transformers. We're also, we've learned to improvise. We've purchased connector conversion kits for underground elbows so we can mix and match between different elbow sizes. The transformer shop is evaluating all incoming transformers, as I mentioned, to determine whether they can be recycled or refurbished. And then we're also providing our own materials to suppliers. For example, in the instance where we send paper to our envelope fabricator to allow them to create envelopes for our billing purposes.
Okay, and finally, just to wrap this up, what do we see in the future? Mark mentioned this, you know, the indicators that we're seeing are that this is gonna last for some commodities. It may last through this year, but certainly for most of the commodities that we buy, we're looking at this, at these constraints being in place until the end of next year. You know, the pricing and lead time, hopefully at that point, sometime in 2023, maybe plateau out and become normalized so that we can start to be better predictors of our demand and the pricing. We continue to use the emergency declaration and give commission regular updates. In the afternoon session, there'll be another addendum to that emergency declaration that describes some of the purchases that we've made after waiving bid requirements for those formal bids. And then we continue to aggressively pursue all options to ensure that materials are available to accommodate planned and unplanned work and customer growth and be sure to have supply on hand for storm restoration. Certainly answer any questions now at this point.
Hey, Clark, while the commission's thinking about questions or follow-up, one other quick comment. Let me, on behalf of a lot of the people around the district, we just to say this out loud, we have a lot of people working on this issue from a lot of different departments. And This is definitely the issue of the year for 2022. It's really creating a lot of work in a lot of different places, and it will definitely have an impact on our financial performance for this year. There's just no two ways about it. And the one thing I was going to follow up to, we mentioned storm on a previous slide, and this came up in a conversation yesterday with Guy Payne and others. There is a compounding effect on the storms. This goes without saying, but if you think about it, you know, we need to prepare ourselves for the storms, the equipment replacements. It makes it harder for that. The cost implications, the lead times, all of those kinds of things just make it worse. And so we all need to cross our fingers for a good storm season this year. We do our best to prepare well for those in a normal year, but we could really use some luck this year as far as the storm goes. And Allison, thanks for reminding me. Scott Jones, Chief Financial Officer. Sorry, I always forget to do that. But I appreciate everybody's hard work on this. We've got a lot of people that are working really hard, just so on behalf of a lot of us, we really appreciate all the attention to this because it's really a big issue for us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well said.
Sorry, John, I interrupted you.
I was just going to say, well said, Scott. That is spot on. And this will be a key issue for us to manage over the next 18 to 24 months.
So besides the economic challenge, how are we going to, it's a hard question to answer, are we going to be able to continue to serve our customers? Are we going to be able to restore power? Are we going to be able to help new construction? What have we figured out when we start running out of things like transformers? What happens first? And
that's a great question, Mr. Logan. I can attempt to tackle that. So we feel like we've put measures in place to address the first two items, keep our current customers in power and provide restoration by identifying minimum stock levels based on what we would typically use annually for carpool accidents or car pad mount transformer accidents. But we could potentially be faced in the coming months with the need to turn away a new customer, whether that might be a plat developer or a new commercial development. And the reason there's some uncertainty around that is because, as you saw from the lead time slide, we don't really know when we're going to get the transformers. We have some ideas around it. We get projections from Howard, but frankly, you know, not all those lead times that they've quoted in the past have been met. So there's some skepticism around when we might be getting transformers in. So we're proactively meeting weekly to look at projects. As I mentioned, we're prioritizing projects, and we're also communicating out with the development community. We've been to the Master Builders Association meetings to let them know about the shortage. We have engineers communicating out with customers, letting them know that we've got some uncertainty around our stock, and doing our best to get the message out there.
Well, Gary, thank you for all the hard work. And I hope we are lucky, Scott.
Unbelievable. It's just, Commissioner Olson, I do have some follow-up questions, and maybe they were in this and they just went over my head. The issue of plat development and master builders, are we working closely with them in terms of situation today and what we might see in the future?
We are. We're meeting with them regularly. We have conversations with them fairly frequently. They're actually, we're getting great cooperation from the developer.
Oh, good. Okay.
Right now, we're issuing transformers on an as-needed basis or a just-in-time basis for the developments. And there's a cost, frankly, to the developer with that approach. There's a cost there, but we really have no choice at this point in time, because if we met all the 90-day demand for all the current developments in the county, we wouldn't have any transformers left. In fact, we couldn't meet that demand. So I really have to commend the development community with the amount of collaboration and cooperation we've been seeing. And I think that comes from the fact that it's not just our materials that they're seeing shortages in. They're seeing it across the board.
Oh, sure.
Housing materials. And so they understand the situation that we're in both nationally and globally.
Yeah, and I was just kind of pile onto that. I think we are lucky that Mark Fleury, Aaron Janasco, a lot of folks have really worked hard over the past few years to build that relationship and that rapport with master builders. I think that's paying dividends in this process. And again, as Mark said, the frequency and those conversations is really imperative. And again, to Mark's point, the saving grace a little bit is that the builders are having the same types of supply issues. So, you know, I know they're not able to finish homes and or some of the homes are at a place because they're waiting on materials as well. So it's not just our industry. It is across all industries.
Yeah. This is Tony again. Let's see. You spoke to financial positions, and I'm thinking that's a big one. And this really prohibits you from doing just-in-time inventory. So therefore, if we buy along with more than what we might need in a certain period, we do have an increase in cost of on-hand inventory, but there's nothing you can do about that. And also, as I hear all this, doesn't it on the other end really difficult for those that are contracting with us, whether it be consulting services or whatever? If we're out on the street with a public works contract, isn't it almost impossible for those contractors to zero in on a bid?
Commissioner,
I guess maybe I'm getting too much into the weeds. I mean, their considerations in, let's say, public works in bidding is the availability of their crews, and that is matched with other contracts that they have. So have you seen any issues with that?
It's very common for me to see amendments to contracts for public works projects where we're extending the time to completion.
Yeah, okay.
Delays for materials that contractors just can't get in time, and we've had to extend their, and we've tried to take into consideration on the front end for the bid, some of those lead time issues, and then that the costs are going to be increased to contractors, and there is some uncertainty in that area when they go out to buy. You can see that the prices don't last as long as they used to, and so it is a concern for contractors when they're estimating and making their
bid. Yeah, agree. What a mess.
Commissioner Olson, I would say to your comment earlier about just-in-time delivery, we've actually moved from just-in-time to just whenever. That's kind of the...
Oh, really? Approach. Oh, okay. I didn't know that.
Whenever we get it, we use it.
So also just-in-time is, I think we passed our rate increase just-in-time.
Oh, dear. This other one, and you're darned if you do and you're darned if you don't. We are hoping for a good storm season. And if we don't get that, is there any benefit in our communicating to our customers our materials, supply chain issues, or after a major storm, we tell them we have supply chain issues, and that's why we didn't get the power on as soon as we normally would have.
I was just thinking about that, and slide number 5, I was thinking, wouldn't it be good, it says about root causes, wouldn't it be good if this could be communicated through our local media in lots of different ways? That here's what we're facing right now, and a lot of people are aware of this, or some people are very aware of this, but a lot of people they're not aware. They have no idea what we're suffering or what the burdens are for the PUD. And I just think that if more people understood this, they would have more empathy for the PUD as we're struggling through this. you know, the five root causes. These are general enough that I think anybody, just about anybody, could understand them. And then they may even follow up and say, well, what about this? My hope is that, unlike some other providers of like petroleum products, which are making record profits,
yeah,
my hope is that none of these companies are making profits off of the situation. But I know that at the federal level, they're showing a lot of abuse, fraud and abuse that has come out of the money that the government has supplied as relief to employers. And so, you know, I don't want to think about fraud and abuse, but it does exist. And so I don't know, I'm sure you don't probably have the capacity to work on that, but hopefully somebody's watching at some level to see, to make sure that these companies that provide things like transformers and copper and
Commissioner, getting back to something that came to both of our thought patterns was communication to our customers.
Uh-huh.
I can see pluses to it, but I can also see negatives because we don't want to create panic. It wouldn't be panic, but unnecessarily concern. I don't know. I think it might also lead to, you know what I mean? It's yes. Plus or minus. Where's Julie?
Yeah.
On the actionable one, asking them to reduce paper, we did do that. And it was effective. Most of these aren't really actionable by our customers. They don't, if the transformer goes out, that's attached to, you know, that's feeding their home, they're not really at fault, and they're going to want that replaced, and they're not really going to be very I just don't think that our supply chain issues are going to, I'm just not sure it's not actionable by them. Most of these aren't, so I'm not
sure. No, but they'll be on the receiving end if it takes us 5 days of storm restoration as opposed to maybe a day and a half.
Right.
That's what I was getting at. And I think that is what Commissioner Wolf was getting at. Yeah. But, you know, is Julie there?
Yeah, Commissioner.
is that a really stupid idea?
John, I'm sorry, I was talking.
Yeah, I would just chime in with a comment. I think, and again, it would be good to huddle up with Julie and her team and some other folks to see if there wouldn't be some potential targeted messages that we would want to give to customers and or other specific groups, mm-hmm. similar to what we are doing with master builders. Mm-hmm. In the near term, from a storm perspective and communicating that to our customers, I say that, knock on wood, especially after the forecast for this part of the week, but we are traditionally moving out of storm season. Yeah, so I would wait until later in the summer and kind of see where we are from a storm stock perspective. And then as we, you know, start to usually do communications to our customers about storm preparedness, we could integrate some messaging around supply chain issues as they stand at that time. That would be my thoughts.
I agree.
John, are you trying to take over my job?
No way. That's not a chance.
Well, I knew you folks had come up with some rational.
That's pretty much the strategy that we've been working close with Mark Fleury and his team on watching this. The one thing I would add to that is we do think there are opportunities like sharing with maybe our commercial industrial customers ahead of time, some of what we're going, they can relate to it more. We have a newsletter that goes out to them. So they're on our priority list for maybe talking to this spring, summer, as they are doing their own planning. But general communications feels like it's a great thing to be talking to our customers about as we go into storm season, where we're most likely to be targeted. And it's good that we're talking with the master builders and builders, because that's certainly a an audience that's impacted too. So there's opportunity, but I do want to assure you, you know, even if we were to go out to our residential customers, we'd be really careful about what we were saying, trying to make sure, like the paper issue, that we're sharing the challenges rather than creating angst with them.
That's what I thought was what I said initially would create more angst than value.
And we're really mindful of that. These are anxious times. So anytime we can help make everybody feel a little calmer and things, I think it helps. So, yeah.
Well, I agreed with you, Julie, and I respect that, your comments. But these very causes of our problems right now, other people are sharing right mm-hmm. now. And that's why I think it would be good to at least, and talking about what we're doing about it too is good without going on and on. But I do think that the more that the owners of the PUD understand, the better off we are. And I think they can handle it.
Commissioner, to that point, I would absolutely agree with that. I think we've done a lot of that through our paper issue. I think we elevated that the district is challenged with supply issues, you know, there. So we are getting word out about the challenges we're facing, I think, somewhat. And we have referred to our transformers and things, but we certainly can look to guidance. I know John will take us through different scenarios and things, but please know we are trying to work it in where it seems appropriate with our customers, even now, even when
this is just a suggestion from one of your board members.
Thank you.
Because a lot of the small businesses who may not be on your big list, mm-hmm. they are also experiencing raw material shortages, shipping delays, all of that. And so anyway, just
one good opportunity John had in this fall that we did was get an early jump on talking to the Herald editorial board about well. And it was a very good conversation. So we are trying to tie in those different places. I know he got to mention it too at the Economic Alliance when he spoke at that. You know, we're trying to weave it into some of our messaging even now. So
I agree with everything you said.
And to Commissioner Wolf's point, there are a lot of businesses and other industries that are experiencing these same, if not worse, shortages, depending on either raw material issues, supply mm-hmm. chain, you know, raw materials and the shipping issues. I mean, again, I'm, you know, at a industry conference now, and that is a key topic. In fact, it was some of the presentations, some of the roundtables were actually changed to talk about this particular issue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, thank you for the presentation. I know I've been the one been carping on it for several months, so I do appreciate you putting it together.
This is Guy Payne, AGM of Distribution and Engineering Services. And just a little bit more background on our situation here at the PUD. We're in pretty good shape right now with overhead transformers, and that's generally the transformers that we would lose during a storm. The larger pad mount transformers are the ones we're a little bit shorter on. We did find an alternate vendor and just got 48 more transformers ordered with about a 20-week lead time, if I believe is right. We're also talking with our peers, and somebody might have mentioned this earlier. My broadband dropped off for just a minute. But we're also working with other utilities, and if we're overstocked in some areas and they're understocked, you know, we're talking about invoicing one another and helping levelize the supply chain a little bit. We're not in a dire situation right now. We could get to a point where we have to tell a customer to wait, that they're going to have to wait until the next load of transformers comes in, et cetera. So, but as far as storm goes, I do believe we're in pretty good shape right now.
Good. Great. Thank you, Guy.
And we've also identified transformers all across the system that we're not using. And Mark may have mentioned this earlier, but we're not sending transformers that we bring in on retirement out. We're saving parts. We're saving old transformers that we could change oil in and get back up in the air. So we're doing, you know, we're not leaving any stones unturned, I would say, as far as things we can do to make sure we continue to serve our customers.
We're very grateful for that.
John, do you have any more items to bring before us this morning?
That is it.
Let's see, it is 11:40 a.m. We do have time for public comment. And if you would like to comment or to provide public comment to the commission, please indicate you would like to speak by clicking hand raise, or if you're joining us by phone, dial *9. And I guess I will ask Allison, do we have anybody in the queue?
You do, Commissioner Olson. You have Gayla Shoemake.
All right, wonderful. Good morning, Gayla.
Good morning, Commissioner Olson and Logan and Wolf. Thank you very much. I wanted to say that I was very pleased to see the response to customer concerns about the Snake River dams. And I just want to let Commissioner Logan know that I think it's a good opportunity to prove that you guys really listen to your customers. Because there's sometimes a feeling out there that you, as commissioners, are so high up that you don't really listen to customers. So even though it might be a little unusual in Sid's perspective, it's very, very important, because I know there are a lot of people are interested in this. And personally, I have my own feelings about the Snake River dams, but I don't know the whole picture. And having been a high-level administrator for a college, I know that it's important that you see the whole perspective. So I am definitely going to take time on the 29th to talk to my groups to let them know this is an opportunity to see the whole picture. Mm-hmm. And I think that will help them to be more amenable to whatever the decision might be. And although the PUD may not be taking a position right now, we are a very important participant in this discussion, and particularly both the receiving and the giving end of it. So we need to be informed. And I think if the customers are informed, I think we'll be able to support the commission, whatever you end up doing regarding the Snake River. And also, the second thing I want to talk about is that the issue with the supply chain. And I, although perhaps I understand your reticence to tell the customers exactly how bad the situation is, I think they already know. And I will definitely be letting my groups know that some of the things I saw in your presentation this morning, and I think they will be more understanding. The only thing I think, Sid, that customers can actually do in this case is if there's any way that our using less energy would help a situation, we can do that. I'm one of these people that keep my temperature very low anyway, but if I needed to turn off my heat, I would be willing to do that. And so keep us in mind as being partners with this supply chain issue. And thank you very much for the work, for putting together the workshop. I'll look forward to getting myself better informed. Thank you.
Thank you, Gayla. That excellent input. Allison, do we have anyone else that would like to make public comment?
I did not see any other hands raised.
No other hands raised. Well, it is 11:43 a.m. And our meeting is being recessed. The regular meeting will reconvene virtually at 1:30 p.m.